Life,
a podcast of the cinema,
starring Alonzo Duralde, who is the film reviews editor of Movies.com.
What?
Wait. I used to work for Movies.com.
Yes.
You were the film reviews editor of The Wrap.
Yes, I am.
Movies.com, does it even exist anymore?
I have no idea.
I left them in my dust.
Yeah.
So you're the movie reviews editor for The Wrap.
Mm-hmm.
You're the co-host of the untitled Iffy, Drea, and Alonzo project.
Mm-hmm.
Currently in between names.
Yes.
You're the co-host of Breakfast All Day.
Mm-hmm.
You're the co-host once a week of Deck the Hallmark.
Mm-hmm.
And you're the co-host of A Film and a Movie.
Yes.
Podcast.
Yes.
I am
Dave White.
Dave White. And I have written about films in the past. And then the pandemic happened, and I haven't done it since. And
but you've been doing this show.
I'm going to make dinner when we're done.
Yes. And you opened the program with your crooning of Sondheim and Leonard
now
Bernstein.
Now it begins. Now we start. One man. Shh, me, I'm singing. Oh, one heart, even death won't part.
It's a duet.
Us now. It's not a duet. When I sing it.
Dave White, the Broadway album.
Listen, it's the best song in that show. It's the one that makes me get all cryy.
In your feels.
Please don't say things that are generationally too young for us.
I didn't say it gave you all the feels. I said it put you in your feels.
No, that's also, forget, listen, I'm 56 years old. I am exempt from having to say things that young people say.
Okay, fine.
I don't have to follow the current vernacular.
Okay. And yet you're the first person who'll get all over me when I use old-timey slang in a review or something.
That's different. The reason I get after you is because you're like you're using words like he's a real crackerjack out there. You know?
So for you, it's Gen X or nothing.
I'm saying that you neither age nor youngify yourself.
Fine.
Be who you are.
What if who I am is partly ancient and partly young?
I am officially...
I contain multitudes.
Listen, all right. If we're going to get real into it, I'm going to officially give you a pass. From now on, you have my official pass to use all the old-timey slang that you
Thank
want.
Thank you.
Because...
I just want to talk like Guy Kibbe.
There have been some reviews, though, where I've read your first draft, and I'm like, I'm sorry, what is this word? What are you saying? To whomst are you speaking?
Yeah, she giving a guy like me the hi-hat?
You said you didn't really watch the West Side Story trailer?
I was kind of half watching it.
You were kind of half watching the Oscars.
Well,
y'all
yeah.
You and Iffy and Drea were too busy going yakety yak.
Well,
yak
we were doing
night.
A live Twitch, and that's what happens when you.
I gotta listen, y'all. Don't get involved with a person who has many podcasts. Because
that's my favorite Waylon Jennings song.
They have to, Mama. Don't let your babies grow up to be or marry podcasters.
Mm.
I sat on the couch watching the Academy Awards, the 1,093rd edition. And I was not trying to hear you at the table, you know, punctuating everything, talking over stuff. I was trying to hear the show.
Right.
And you were doing your job, but I couldn't figure out how the three of you were watching and talking. I cannot multitask. And I certainly can't multitask in a sound way. Like, I can't speak and be spoken to at the same time. I can't hear two conversations happening at the same time. It sounds like white noise in my head. When that happens.
Well, like, it depends. I know what you mean. Like, if I'm...
It becomes really stressful. I become tired.
if I'm on like a speakerphone call and you try to tell me something, I'm I can't. But this was like, I was kind of half watching the show. Right. We were sort of telling each other what was happening. I was getting snippets and bits of the speeches and then also talking to them about stuff.
Like, I've gone back and listened to early episodes of this podcast where you and I are relentlessly talking over each other. Mm. And I don't know how we didn't just like pass out. And I'm sure people like me, like turned us off and never listened to us again because the crosstalk was out of control.
Well,
we have obviously evolved the past 10 years.
We were Altman-esque.
We didn't know what we were doing. We weren't Altman-esque. We were inept and we didn't know what we were doing. So the, but yeah, you sat around last night. I'm the one that sat around. You were working. Yes. You did work with Iffy and Drea, and I recovered from COVID shot side effects.
Yeah.
We got our Modernas. We got our second Moderna Luis Ciccone shots on Saturday. And you were waiting with breathless anticipation for side effects.
I was
were promised.
My immune system was ready to be taxed.
Yeah.
And nothing.
Nothing happened to you. I fell straight down. I got home. That's not true. I got home and I, you know, put on my comfy clothes, thinking, all right, here we go.
Yeah, no.
It's like getting on the tilt-a-whirl. You know, you're ready.
I curled up with a nice book and figured, all right, it's going
to
happen.
I did the same thing. Like, I sat on the couch and I was like, it's time to watch A Bridge Too Far on Netflix. 3-hour World War II movie. And
that's like when I got a cop, when Stephen King's Misery came out.
Yeah.
I think I was part of some sort of book club or whatever, and I wound up having a hardback copy of it. Yeah. And I was like, I'm saving this for a day that I'm sick.
Yeah.
And then I got sick, and I just spent the day in bed reading Misery.
I went to bed that night thinking, well, maybe there won't be side effects. And Sunday morning, I woke up at like 4 a.m., and everything on my body hurt. Mm. And I thought, is this my body? Or is this the side effects of the shot? And then I got up and I had some breakfast and everything kept hurting. And then around 7:30, I started to feel like I was going to pass out. And I got into bed, wrapped in my flannel robe under like 2 blankets, and I felt cold.
And you're
like,
never cold.
Yeah, I couldn't get warm. So I was having like the chills and the body aches. I slept until noon. You made me my lunch. You were a lovely
caregiver.
You were a sensuous nurse. And I'll be forever grateful. And I took 2 Tylenol. And then by around like 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, I was starting to feel all right.
Yeah.
And then I just watched the Oscars. I have no super opinions about them. It was, I really never do. Mm. I appreciated you did all of your opinionating on Breakfast All Day with Christy today.
Yes.
And that's for anybody to watch, or is it just for Patreon?
No, it's free. Yeah, okay. It's out there.
It's on YouTube.
The
Breakfast All Day podcast, Alonzo and Christy Lemire talk about...
My proudest observation, I said that basically Steven Soderbergh was doing the 5 Obstructions Oscar show.
Well, yeah, exactly, because they had to remote from several different locations.
Mm-hmm. Around the world.
Around the world. They had to, you know, maintain COVID protocol.
Mm-hmm.
They had to make Union Station, which if you don't live in Los Angeles, it's kind of hard to explain. It's not that hard to explain. It's an ancient train station that is still in daily functioning operation.
Yeah.
Everybody in Los Angeles loves Union Station, and that is because it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
And and so many movies have been shot there. Union Station has been a stand-in for any number of train stations set in any number of cities. other places that are not train stations, Union Station has played. If you've ever seen the documentary, Los Angeles Plays Itself, there's a whole chunk of it about Union Station.
It's one of the last places in LA that still looks like the 40s. You know, they tore down the Brown Derby. They
or the 30s or whenever it was built.
Yeah, you know, it has that Southwood. Granted, in putting this show together, the mayor did a crappy job of displacing the unhoused around there.
Crappy job is an understatement. Our mayor needs to be evicted from his job. Mm. And I say our. We live in West Hollywood, so technically he's not our mayor, even though he is. West Hollywood is too difficult to explain. It's a teeny tiny little postage stamp.
It's a little incorporated
pocket of a city smack in the middle of Los Angeles.
Yeah, unincorporated, whatever it is.
So we have our own mayor.
Yeah.
I don't even know who it is.
We don't have LAPD. We have the LA County Sheriffs who are awful in a whole other
separate way. I voted for whoever the new mayor is, I think. I think that person won. Whoever was the most lefty is who I voted for. Mm-hmm. Don't ask me the name right now of that person. But the mayor of Los Angeles is doing a garbage job addressing the population of the city who are unhoused.
Yeah.
And so there you go. Where were we?
Oh, yeah,
the show itself. Okay. They did a weird thing with the best picture. I don't get why they did that. I think they thought they knew why they were doing it, but it was a mistake.
Never pretend
you know what's coming.
Exactly. They took a calculated risk.
Yeah.
And often this kind of thing pays off. Last night, for instance, as Christy pointed out, Riz Ahmed presented sound. And who won? You know, Sound of Metal.
Right.
Brad Pitt presented Best Supporting Actress. And who won? The actress from Minari, which was a Plan B produced film.
Then there was that time Liz Taylor gave the award to Gladiator.
No, that was the Golden Globes.
Same thing.
You know, when Scorsese finally won an Academy Award, and it was presented to him by Spielberg and George Lucas.
Right.
You know, so clearly the whole evening was designed with the thought of like, well, Chadwick Boseman's going to win Best Actor, so we're going to end this show with this really moving moment, and the widow is going to come out and claim the award and like give a nice speech and good night, the end.
And then Anthony Hopkins won.
Yeah. Apparently, the story about Olivia Colman saying that she would have collected it for him, not true.
Oh, right.
According to Kyle Buchanan, he checked, and she's apparently, like, making a film, and she went for her category and then left.
I see.
But Hopkins' reps did offer to have him Zoom in, but the whole big thing with this show was no Zooms.
Right.
So that's why you had people in Paris, in Berlin, in Sydney, in these various places.
Right.
But no.
In the middle of the night.
It was the following morning in Sydney, but no Zooms. So it ended with Joaquin Phoenix kind of shrugging his shoulders and so long, everybody.
We're done. Good night. I admire the attempt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's live TV. You don't know what's going to happen.
I never really have anything emotionally invested in
who wins
in any award show. Really, yeah. I'm there for the outfits. That's all. I'm there for the outfits. You know, if a good movie wins Best Picture, then that's cool. You know, Moonlight, Nomadland.
I think of it as a way that
Parasite.
There is a chunk of the audience that wouldn't have seen these movies that now will.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure in whatever their afterlife looks like, whether it's on Blu-ray or streaming or whatever, being able to say, winner of 2 Academy Awards, like that will grab some eyeballs.
Right.
And so when they give it to a movie I like, I think, well, there's that at least. And then when they don't, it's like, meh.
So this episode, because of this weekend and our my inability to do anything except lie around and go, we are reviewing 1.5 films on this episode.
Okay.
One that we have both seen and one that you have seen. And that's the end. This is a short one today. Normally we go at least an hour, usually more.
We'll have a lot more next week.
Well, sure. But today, shorty, short, short.
Okay.
And sweet.
Always sweet.
Because I'm sweet and you're sour.
You'd like everyone to think that.
Let's let's talk about Mortal Kombat.
I actually, for a second, thought, what movie did we both see?
We
I
sat had down,
already forgotten
Mortal Kombat.
About Mortal Kombat.
Yep.
Now, had you seen the previous Mortal Kombat movie?
Well, here's the thing. Maybe I did.
What about Mortal Kombat Annihilation?
When was that?
I'm looking it up because I'm wondering if that dovetailed with your time at movies.com, the website you erroneously said that I worked at.
No, that was 97.
Oh, that was 97. Yeah. Okay, no, it didn't.
Okay, so here's the thing about the original Mortal Kombat of 1995.
Yes.
At that time, you and I were both living in Dallas.
Yes.
And I was on the tail end of my volunteer years at Aid Services of Dallas.
Right.
And my job, longtime listeners have heard me tell this story many times, I was the person who would drive an 18-seater van across Dallas, taking a dozen children to the movies on a Saturday afternoon. The kids lived at Aid Services of Dallas with their parents. Their parents had AIDS, and the children did not. And they...
The parents wanted the kids out of their hair.
Parents wanted the kids out of their hair for an afternoon on Saturdays. And my gig was load them up, bring them to the Dollar Theater, Big Town Mall. That's pretty
the
much
Big Town.
That's pretty much where we always went. We went to Big Town Mall, which was at that time
as
in the early 90s, a Dollar Theater, as seen in
David Byrne's True Stories, that is the parking lot from Big Town.
The Big Town was
the outside is Big Town, the inside is North Park.
Correct. So, where was I going? Anyway, 1995, I was still doing that gig. Mm-hmm. And in general, I did not take the kids to see PG-13 films.
Right.
We saw G and PG. But by the time I was done, because I volunteered there from 91 until 95. And I, they were little. They were, almost all of them were pretty little when I started. But by the time I was done, you know, several of them were teenagers. Mm. And it made my life so much easier because they were like watching out for the little ones I wasn't, you know, you cannot, listen, nobody can watch 12 kids at once.
No.
You just do your best. And you charge the oldest ones with, keep an eye on, keep an eye on him. Make sure he doesn't run off somewhere. And so we probably wound up at a few PG-13s as my time there came to an end.
Uh-huh.
Now, was one of them Mortal Kombat? Who the hell knows? I saw every kid-themed film or every movie that a kid would want to go see.
Mm-hmm.
The only time I was prescriptive, the only time I didn't let them pick the movie was... Nightmare Before Christmas opened at North Park.
Oh.
And I went to all my friends and I said, give me money.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to buy these kids a full price ticket to North Park Mall movie theater for a first run film.
The fancy mall.
I'm not going to ask their parents to do this. You're going to do it. Give me money. All of my friends gave me money, and it was cool.
All right.
Because, you know, there's like a dozen. I asked about 10 people. I said, movie ticket money, please. I'm taking children to see The Nightmare Before Christmas. They dug it. They dug it. And I was glad that I had bullied all of my friends into giving me ticket money. I was a school teacher. I couldn't afford 12 tickets.
Had I been living in Dallas at the time, I would have given you money for that.
Yes. So the, where was I going with this?
Mortal Kombat.
Who the hell knows if I saw it? I forgot everything. Sometimes I would just doze off. It's like, and if you had taken anyone to see Three Ninjas.
Kickback.
And Three Ninjas Kickback, you two might have dozed off a couple times.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Who would begrudge you?
I knew Space Jam was coming. That's why I quit.
That I remember actually organizing some kind of USA Film Festival screening for like some bunch of kids.
Right.
I can't remember if it was like some school or some charity or something, but I remember working with Warner Brothers to have this whole like Saturday morning Space Jam screening.
Cool. Blah. So, this new one right here.
Yes, Mortal Kombat.
Directed by Simon McQuaid?
McQuaid. First-time filmmaker.
All right. It stars, I'm scrolling down, Louis Tan, Jessica McNamee, Josh Lawson, Joe Taslim.
Woohoo!
My favorite Raid guy.
Yes.
Mashad Brooks. Tadanobu Asano.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Koreeda's Mabarossi in the 90s. He was in Gohato.
Yes.
Later on.
Groundbreaking Japanese gay film.
Yeah. So, like, he's cool.
He's better than this.
Well, isn't everyone, like, I mean.
I think some people are right at the level of this.
Can you explain what's happening in this movie?
Oh, brother. Okay, neither of us have ever played the video game.
Not just once.
So as you know that.
Not even once. I know the memes, you know. Let's fight. Finish him.
Okay. Cole Young is an MMA fighter.
Yes.
He was once a scrappy orphan. Now he has
a wife.
Now he's a scrappy adult. He has a wife and child. He has a funky birthmark of a dragon on him that he just thinks is some random thing.
Yeah.
It is not.
It is not. He's chosen.
He is part of a lineage. He is the
tournaments.
The people. The great, 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 great grandson of a super ninja who we see get killed in 17th century Japan by a vicious Chinese combatant named Bihan. Bihan now goes by Sub-Zero because he can make things freeze. And
the best.
There's this.
He's the coolest character.
There's literally and figuratively. There's a tournament of champions because apparently there are realms and Earth has lost like 9 out of the last 10. If they lose one more, then the planet will be enslaved.
Right.
And the.
I keep saying right. I just assume you're right.
I'm just the. There's a lot of talk about a tournament, and then the tournament never happens. I assume maybe that's in the sequel. Then there's like, so the bad people from the other bad realm are like going out of the way to kill as many people with the dragon thing on them as possible because they're big cheaters.
Right.
This woman named Sonya Blade has the whole requisite a bulletin board with the yarn on it to find all the dragon people.
She has more than one bulletin board.
Yes.
Every wall in her place is a bulletin board with. And I was, as when we see the bulletin board with all the information, I was thinking, shouldn't it be more organized than
this?
Does
no one have a spreadsheet?
Do you not? Like, you could have some neatly organized binders.
I love
of
that.
All your information. Put the information in categories. That way, when you are looking for information, you don't think, oh, which bulletin board did I put that on?
That's like, that is the next Apple product. Like the thing that substitutes for the yarn billboard. Because it assumes that everybody has like actual photographs, like 8x10 glossies that they can thumbtack into a corkboard
somewhere.
Newspaper
clippings.
That stuff. It's bananas. Anyway, so Sonya Blade sends Jax to go find Cole and tell him that the dragon thing means he's chosen. Sub-Zero shows up. They fight. He fights Jax while Cole runs off and goes to find Sonya. When he meets Sonya, she's dealing with this guy named Kano, who is an Australian scumbag, basically. And then they get him to take them to the temple of Lord.
He's a Foster's Lager commercial.
He's Jacko from the Energizer ads. The temple of Lord Raiden, where Cole will learn his arcana, like his superpower thing that the birthmark will give him. But other people get the dragon when they kill somebody else who has the dragon mark on them.
And you learn what your superpower is over time.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, blah, 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 blah.
Fighting.
There's fighting and there's more fighting.
Listen, the blood is fake. But,
and there's so much of it.
But don't let that turn you off from the pleasures of watching this wacky, gory fighting.
The geysers of blood are hilarious.
I was super into it. And even though I could barely figure out why anything was happening the way it was happening, and honestly wasn't trying that hard to figure out why anything was happening, there was enough of the thing I was there for to keep me going. I was very entertained by the fighting and the killing, especially the gorier and nastier it got.
But the fighting isn't that great in this
movie.
No,
it's not. Like, no. Don't get me wrong. Joe Taslim is in this film, and he was in The Raid, and he could throw down.
Yeah.
No one really has to throw down.
No one really throws down. It's a lot of CG, a lot of green screen and
stuff. Badly photographed fights, but still. Gory, splattery, gushy.
Yes. If you're there for the wetness, you will not be disappointed. But my deal is like, fine, this story can be nonsense. This can be it's a dopey video game adaptation, whatever. But if you're going to use that as a context for some really amazing fights, great. You know, show me some amazing fights. They do not. It's nothing is staged very well. The camera's never particularly in the right place. This director doesn't seem to know what he's doing. And, you know, you give me Joe Taslim, you make me think about the two Raid movies, and that's the level that's the bar.
You are, yeah. Here's the thing. Don't put him in this movie. No, you know what they do? They do exactly the right thing, in spite of our distaste for it. They cover up his cute face. Yes, with a mask, right, for the whole film.
Because the guy in the game had one.
But the more you cover up his face, the less you remember that, oh yeah, this is the guy from The Raid. So
they're playing a long game.
You
here.
Stop
okay.
worrying about the fact that this is entirely beneath him.
So yeah, if they had made a movie that was as fun as The Raid and put it in the context of this dippy,
can you imagine,
video game and kept in the wacky CG blood?
Well, it would have been like, do they still have NC-17? It would have been NC-17. The Raid is so hyperactively violent.
Oh, it's so good.
But acrobatic. It's like ballet. Oh, God, it's perfect. Yes. It's a perfect movie. And
I think I like Raid Redemption even better than The Raid.
It's the Raid and Raid Redemption. Wait, is that number two?
Raid Redemption's the second one, I think.
I thought Raid Redemption was the first one.
Oh, they've all got subtitles.
I always just call it The Raid. Well, The Raid and The Raid 2.
The Raid 2, yes.
All right.
I like Raid 2 better.
They're one long movie for me. This one, okay, it's dumb. And
you're
it's
right,
not,
The Raid Redemption is the first one.
It's dumb and it's not good. I sat on the couch and enjoyed myself quite a bit, though.
I was entertained more than I was not entertained, but by the end of it, I kind of felt like I was laughing at stuff that the movie was wanting me to take deadly seriously.
Yeah, do we think the film
knows
that it's, like, you know, amusing?
I don't know.
Do they think their jokes are what's supposed to be amusing, even though those aren't the amusing
parts? Oh, those are not funny.
The film?
No. Yeah. The blood is what's funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know that the movie knows that.
There are some inventive killings,
mm-hmm,
that I was really into.
I can see if you're playing this game, I could see why you'd want to be the hat guy.
Who wouldn't want to be the hat guy?
The hat guy has it going on.
Yeah. Look. Okay, sure. It sucks, but I...
But you didn't hate it.
I didn't hate myself for watching it.
Okay, even better.
Also, it was free.
That always...
Never forget, film critics get to see movies for free quite often.
True.
And if you're going to pay, you know...
Well, if you've already got HBO Max, it's free for you.
All right, if you have HBO Max, it's also technically kind of free.
For the time being. It's, you've already paid for it, I'll put it that way.
Indeed.
And
you, and not I...
Yes.
...watched
something... Stowaway. Stowaway is this Netflix movie that is dumb, but has a really good cast.
Dumber or less dumb than Mortal Kombat?
I guess less dumb, but it is dumb in a context of being about smart people.
All right.
It is dumb in the context of being a movie about, like, scientists solving problems.
Okay.
And they make dumb moves. So it is directed by a guy named Joe Penna, who did that movie Arctic a couple years ago with Mads Mikkelsen, where he's like trapped in the Arctic.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, so this one, they're trapped in space.
Yeah.
It's a three-person mission to Mars. The captain, the commanding officer is Toni Collette. She is taking two scientists who were picked out of all these people who made proposals for like Mars research. One play a doctor played by Anna Kendrick and a biologist botanist played by Daniel Day-Kim.
Yeah.
So they shuttle or rocket whatever up to this like floating space station, and then they're going to spend time there before going down to Mars. Well, they start noticing very early on that something seems to be awry, and what turns out, oops, a stowaway, an accidental stowaway, one of the ground crew, like
Helen Hayes, one of the great ladies of the American theater,
exactly, with a grease pencil. No, Shamir Anderson, who. Yep. I've seen in some stuff he's also Stephen James's older brother, apparently.
All right.
From, you know, the guy from If Beale Street Could Talk.
Yes.
So he's like a ground crew guy who's a grad student, like somehow passes out, falls into the thing, like makes it all the way into space with no one noticing. Okay, sure. And of course, the thing that he falls into is like the CO2 scrubber. So they're like really in trouble.
Okay.
Trying to like, you know, not asphyxiate on the space station.
Well, yeah.
So, so it's like, you know, either they have to sort of, you know, throw him out the airlock, basically, or can they fix the situation?
Yeah.
And no one comes up with ideas that are particularly good. Mm-hmm. And none of the story beats make particular sense. The characters are never drawn with any kind of real interest. And, anything that's good in this movie feels like a half-hearted version of something you already saw in The Martian or Gravity.
Okay.
And then everything else in this movie is just everything else in this movie.
All right. I forgot everything you just said.
You needn't bother is really all you need to know about Stowaway.
And those are the reviews for the week.
Yeah.
We spent approximately 15 minutes on them. Do you have a DVD or streaming pick of the week?
I have a DVD pick, yes. A Blu-ray pick. Criterion this week is putting out a movie I think we both are big fans of. Olivier Assayas' Irma Vep.
Oh, yeah.
Starring the great Maggie Cheung. It is a movie in which Maggie Cheung plays herself, and it is a movie that is kind of about... Well, herself in quotes.
Right.
It's kind of a movie about the star quality of Maggie Cheung.
And she's got it.
Oh, yes. By the wheelbarrow full.
She's your Venus.
Yeah. Yeah, baby, she's got it. So she plays a version of herself who has been called to France to star in a new remake of the silent film Les Vampires, which is kind of a sort of an early heist film. She spends much of the movie in a black latex cat suit,
yeah,
and trying to figure out what the heck this movie that she's in even is.
Mm-hmm.
While Irma Vep, the film that she is in, also is trying to figure out what it is.
Right.
Jean-Pierre Léo, who is the, you know, one of the great stars of the French New Wave. He was François Truffaut's sort of like stand-in in the Antoine Doinel movies, like The 400 Blows and that whole series of films. He made films for Godard. He was like, you know, he was the dude. He plays the inscrutable director of this movie who never gives anybody a straight answer about what it's about or what they're doing or what they're shooting or anything.
Right.
It's a cool movie about the filmmaking process, but it's also a cool movie about movies and how we respond to them and what we want to get out of them. It's real awesome.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. As I mentioned earlier, came home from my shot and got myself a piece of cake. You went into the back to read the Mike Nichols bio, book,
which is so good.
And I sat down on the couch and I thought, as I wait for Side Effects to begin, I'm going to finally watch A Bridge Too Far.
Now, when you say finally, how long has this been kicking around as a movie you felt like you needed to see? Like since its original release, or as an adult? Oh, I'm that guy who likes to watch World War II things.
When I was a child, it came out in 1977. It's a film from Sir Richard Attenborough.
Yes.
3-hour World War II themed film. When I was a child, I did not care for war films. Wasn't my thing. That genre of filmmaking was not anything I was interested in. Mm-hmm. Something kicked in as I became an adult. And now I can't get enough of them.
This is why you never find it funny in that Geico commercial about stopping people from turning to their parents when they make the joke about who reads submarine novels?
My dad.
I love a submarine movie.
You watched all of the Ken Burns World War II doc.
All 20-something hours of the Ken Burns World War II documentary. I didn't realize that I was turning into a cliche because I don't have enough heterosexual, middle-aged, actual dads in my life to encourage me or to let me know that this was that this is their thing.
You haven't spilled over into the guy who watches the History Channel for hours during like a Hitler documentary marathon.
No.
I'll give you that.
I have not yet done that. But not only do I love a war movie, I love a World War II movie. Can't get enough. Hmm. Well, this was a big papa right here. This came out in 77, 3-hour epic. It was supposed to be a big deal. I don't think it was. It certainly has the cast to encourage you to think of it as a big deal. Right. I will now read you the names of the men plus woman.
It might be shorter to just tell us who's not in this movie.
Here's who's in it. Dirk Bogarde, James Caan, Michael Caine, Sean Connery, Elliot Gould, Gene Hackman, Anthony Hopkins, Laurence Olivier, Ryan O'Neill, Robert Redford, Maximilian Schell, and Liv Ullmann as the woman.
It received 0 Oscar nominations, so that tells you.
And you know they wanted some.
But it did do well at the BAFTAs.
Well, let me tell you, it's about a specific mission during World War II where the Allied forces are trying to stop the Nazis from blowing up some bridges. Mm-hmm. Things don't work out exactly the way they want. And there are long stretches of this film where it's people in uniforms walking around and talking about stuff. But then there's action. And when it's action-y and the war action is taking place and there's people being chased in jeeps and explosions going off and people being gunned down surprise style and bridges blowing up. Exhilarating. So it's a roller coaster of I'm bored, I'm bored, I'm bored, I'm bored. Boom, 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 boom.
What's the really long World War II movie with Richard Burton that I always get confused with this one?
I don't know.
He was in another one that was like around this time that was like everybody was in it and it was, you know, 3 hours.
We'll have to figure the name of that movie out in a bit. In any case.
Where Eagles Dare.
Where Eagles Dare. There are some spectacular big shots because it's Richard Attenborough. Mm-hmm. Most notably, like hundreds of guys parachuting slowly through the sky. And the camera can't get enough of this. And you realize as you're watching it that you also cannot get enough of it. A fully satisfying 3 hours where half the time I thought, am I going to finish it?
Do you know the big World War II movie of our youth that I'm kind of curious to check out that was even less successful than A Bridge Too Far? Remember Yanks?
Yes. I've never seen it, though.
I've never either, but it's John Schlesinger.
Where Eagles Dare is from 68.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it has that amazing poster.
Right.
That sort of Poseidon Adventure poster where, I've never seen it. Now I'm going to watch it just because of this poster. Clint Eastwood, Richard Burton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not the one I'm thinking of. I'll watch that. There's a couple of movies that have just like cast lists as long as your arm.
It doesn't matter if the World War II movie is good or not.
You will watch
it. I'll just sit down and watch it.
Okay. Oh, you.
I cannot explain myself. I have not interrogated myself enough to wonder why I care about it. It could be the Ken Burns doc that really pushed me over because it's such a moving, you know, documentary.
Yeah.
And it requires a full day's worth of your watching. And I mean, literally nearly 24 hours
right.
of viewing time.
We have some letters.
Who cares?
How dare you?
We deeply care.
We do.
We love your letters. JD says, my online screening of Shiva Baby included an interview with Emma Seligman, the director.
Writer-director.
Yeah. She was asked about the casting issue. Rachel Sennett was the lead because she played the role in the original short when both of them were students. As for the rest of the cast, they didn't have a budget and could only be so selective. She acknowledged that this was not ideal. Perhaps we need to grade on a curve somewhat when evaluating diversity in small indies versus studio films. Yeah, I do agree with you on that because we did discuss that last week. You know,
the issue here
is
that
movie, you don't have a lot of, you know, you don't have a lot of luxury in choices,
right?
With who you can pay. Who can you get for the amount of money you have?
Right, if any. I just for anybody who missed last week's episode, there's been some discussion about the fact that Rachel Sennett, who plays the lead in Shiva Baby, is not herself Jewish.
Right. JD continues by saying, I don't have the answer. Also, the baby in the title is a play on Sugar Baby, which is apparently what the kids are calling the other half of a sugar daddy relationship.
Ah. Well, it's also, I can't believe I forgot to mention this, it's also a play on Sheba Baby, which was a Pam Grier movie of the 1970s.
Hmm. Are you sure that was intentional?
I don't know, but it's awfully close. It seems
it's
like it's
also Sugar Daddy and Sugar Baby are candy products as well.
That's true. There was a Sugar Mama.
There was
too.
Sugar Mamas, but those were discontinued.
I think so.
We know a lot about candy.
Yes, I think the Sugar Mamas maybe were chocolate covered caramel, and the Sugar Daddies were just the caramel. The Sugar Babies were so good.
Here's a letter on the same subject from Mint. Your discussion of Shiva Baby and questions around what we mean/want/need when it comes to representation struck a chord with me. My experience with these questions are more related to trans/non-binary representation, and I should say that my view on this is probably not the majority of you among other trans/non-binary people.
Nope, sorry, Mint. You are the spokesperson for everybody. Own it. I kid.
But I get frustrated in these conversations because I think there are two distinct problems that we usually collapse in an unhelpful way. There's the question of representation, which is primarily about culture, meaning, and authenticity. And then there's the industrial question, which is about the material circumstances of marginalized actors and writers and directors, etc. When it comes to trans representation, I believe this means there are demands we have about how trans people are represented on film and demands we have about how trans artists are treated in the industry. The industrial problem for trans artists is how they are excluded from the industry writ large, but also how they are typecast into only playing roles that are explicitly about, quote, the trans experience, which limits how many roles there are for trans artists in the first place. The representation problem, as I see it, is that Hollywood continues to cast cis male actors as trans women and vice versa. This goes from being just unpleasant to harmful, because it just adds to the ammunition of people who don't believe trans women are women at all.
Right.
This is why I don't have a problem with, for instance, Felicity Huffman in Trans America. Cis women actors playing trans women roles doesn't present a representation problem in my eyes because it affirms that trans women are women.
Hmm.
The problem I have in that case is that we still have an industrial problem of the marginalization of trans actors of whichever gender being typecast. So, at the moment, I think the political goal of hiring trans actors for trans roles is necessary for the industrial question. But if we ever get to a better normal where trans actors aren't excluded at the industrial level, I don't have a problem with cis actors playing trans roles of their own gender. How does this distinction apply to the Shiva Baby question? I'm not sure. I'm neither Jewish nor an actor, so my view doesn't stand for much on that. But as a Marxist, I do think it's important to highlight the experience of the laborers in this conversation, because representation alone isn't going to liberate any of us from our respective struggles.
Well said.
Mint, you are such a great letter person with us.
And
thank you.
Next week, we'll be talking about Together Together, speaking of trans performers being, you know, not being shut into specific kinds of roles.
Yes. I was supposed to be able to watch Together Together for this show, and then my link expired because I was feeling terrible from my shot. Yeah.
But you can read my review on The Wrap. I reviewed it out of Sundance. It's terrific. We'll be talking about it next time.
The end.
Okay. Well.
Are we under an hour?
We are under an hour.
Golly.
So
it's been nearly 10 years since this the case.
So I hope you enjoyed this nibble of an episode. Yeah. Thanks for listening. Do check out my other podcasts, Breakfast All Day, A Film and a Movie, The Untitled Iffy, Dre, and Alonzo Project. Mondays, I'm on Deck the Hallmark. And this week, I'm on Can't Wait for Christmas, because Tim drops a new episode on the 25th of every month. And because the 25th of this month was the Academy Awards, we kind of gave out our own sort of Christmas Oscars and talked about the history of how Christmas movies have fared at the Oscars. Spoiler, not all that great. It was fun. So check that out. And check out our friends on the internet. See what Bibbs and Whitney are up to over at the Critically Acclaimed Network. Listen to The Schmoes Know, Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, The Comics Canon, Sewers of Paris, All Things Cozy, Big Fat Gay Podcast, The Workroom, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this show for free at Apple Podcasts. Please leave us a 5-star rating. We'll read it on the air. You can also leave us positive feedback in the many places that we stream, including Stitcher Radio, TheLounge.com, Spotify, CastBox, Podbean, Google Play, Apple Music, Amazon Music, and much more. We have a Patreon at patreon.com/ Linoleum Knife. You should really go check that out.
So many things there for you to subscribe.
Yes.
Yeah.
We think you'll like it. You can follow us on the social media at Linoleum Cast, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thank you, Blue, for our wonderful theme music. Follow him at bandcamp.com/BLEU. And drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We do champion your letters. And that's kind of it. Until next time.
Goodbye.